Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This is Bernie Lubbers, the global brand ambassador for whiskeys for Heaven Hill Distillery out of Bardstown in Louisville, Kentucky, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
I'm HRN's Executive Director, Katie Mosman-Wadler, with a preview of this week's episode of Meat and Three, Heritage Radio Network's weekly food news roundup. This week, we're celebrating Black culture through the complicated lens of agriculture. We speak to Carla Hall about her uncompromising soul food recipes.
And I was like, what am I doing? Why am I changing my family's history for another culture?
We also hear from Gabriela Rodriguez at Harlem Grown's Youth Farm Uptown.
About empowerment and, you know, community resilience building through this work. Food is kind of just a vehicle.
Leah Penniman addresses feeling like an outsider in the farming community.
I could count on my two hands the number of people who appeared to be POC, people of color. And so I literally would go around little slips of paper and say, hey, meet at 1 o'clock under this tree so we can talk.
Tune in to this week's Meet and Three on Heritage Radio Network. That's Meet plus sign THREE, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. I'm Souther Teague. My co-host Damon Bolte is still lounging around in San Francisco, I suppose, enjoying the beautiful weather out there. Damon, we miss you. I hope you're listening. I've got a few things I want to say before we get to our guests in the studio today. I want to congratulate a bunch of people, a lot of people. Congratulations are in order for all of the James Beard Award semifinalists. The list came out today. Especially want to congratulate some of my dear friends on that list, including Derek Brown down at the Columbia Room in Washington, D.C., Ivy Mix and Julie Reiner at Leander right here in Brooklyn, and especially to Anu and Chris Elford at Seattle's No Anchor. I can't wait to hear who moves on to the finals, and I'm wishing good luck to everybody who made the list at all. It's really pretty amazing. Another thing I want to mention. Yeah, let's do that. There we go. Thanks, Matt. I also want to mention something I'm involved in. I've been involved in for a couple of years now. It's far away. August 25th to 28th will be the New York City session of Bar Methods. That's a sort of a 101 intro class for bartenders where we teach basic techniques. I typically teach a class of stirring, which is, you know, a 90-minute course of me teaching you how to stir. It sounds like a lot of extra time, but I always run out of time before I'm done. Honestly, when they told me, you know, you got 90 minutes to talk about stirring, I was like, I can do it in 2 minutes. And then he said, no, just think about it. And then I went away and I started thinking about it. And I was like, I called him back and I was like, can I have 2 hours? And he was like, no, it's 90 minutes, dude, cram it in. So there's a lot to be said, you know, when you really get into immersive things like this. So Bar Methods, you can go to www.barmethods.com. Applications are now open for this year's session in New York City. It's a pretty great program. For a set price, you get to come. You pay for your own travel to get here, obviously. But once you're in New York City, you get put up at a hotel for 3 days. You get to go through all the courses. You get fed meals. You get sponsored events. It's pretty intensive and really rad. So I highly recommend you get on that. Barmethods.com for the New York City sessions, August 25th to the 28th. So that's all I've got to kick off the show. But here in the studio today, we've got Brendan Casey, who is current owner-operator of Parlor Wine and Spirits here in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. Welcome to the studio, Brendan.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man, it's good to see you again. We're kind of neighbors, right? I just moved out of the city and into Greenpoint, which, you know, I've already admitted a few times on the air that I'm not really fond of. I realized immediately that I'm not cut out to live on a quiet tree-lined street, which is where I wound up here in Greenpoint. But I'm happy to have a shop like yours nearby.
Oh, thanks so much. Yeah, we're a little bit of New York City sanity in the middle of a pretty sleepy neighborhood.
I mean, where you are is more active than where I'm at. The street that I'm on is literally almost 3 blocks of zero businesses.
The commercial street level commercial g- gives you that energy that you don't have on your street, for sure.
I mean, I lived in the East Village in Lower East Side for 15 years.
Yeah.
And then I found this apartment that's like, oh my God, it's three times the size of my apartment. It's $250 a month less.
The math checks out.
Yeah, let's do this thing. And like, I think the night I moved in, I was like, oh, shit. What a mistake.
Yeah, if you have buyer's remorse.
I signed a two-year lease.
That's just a little bit of growing pains for it, I think.
It'll be fine. Yeah. I also, the converse to that, it's the best apartment I've ever lived in. There I mean, go. Ever. Not in New York, just ever. Like, it's the greatest apartment. I love the apartment, but man.
Making a step up and making a change, like we're going to talk about today for sure, is frequently you have this idea that it's a good thing to do, and then you forget how goddamn hard it is.
Right. Yeah. We have you on the show because I only just met you through a mutual friend of ours. You're running this cool shop in Greenpoint that sells wine and spirits, obviously. And I thought to myself, you know, I don't think in the history of the speakeasy, unless it was before my time, and I did scroll back through to see, that we've ever had anybody on who ran an off-premise, a retail site. And I think it's a conversation that we need to have. You know, like, we talk, obviously, all the time about bartending and selling, you know, booze and spirits and wine to people, you know, by the glass.
Yeah.
But now you've shifted to selling by the bottle. But let's talk about your career prior to that, because you did the opposite before, and now you made the leap. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, so it's definitely, like we're saying, it's got a lot of big challenges to it, and there are distinct and discrete differences between doing on and off premise. And it's only been a few months that we've been into this particular project with the doors open. We've been working on it for a year and a half now. There's so much to it that's so different. So I'll unpack that for sure. I started working in bars and restaurants when I was a kid. So it's been now 26 years, which
As a kid, did your dad own the joint?
No, I worked at this Sicilian gelato place out in Long Island that made 80 different flavors of house-made gelato and sorbet. It's crazy. It's still there. It's been there for a long time. And so that was the start of it for me, you know, $5 an hour cash.
Yeah, buddy.
You know, as a sophomore in high school, it's like
rolling
a huge pile of money. And every month on a Saturday, at the end of service, they would close the restaurant. The owners would go home. The waiters, the bartenders, the back boys, everybody would have a big poker game in the back room and get really drunk. And for like being a 14-year-old kid smoking cigarettes and gambling, you know, the $60 you made in tips that night.
Right.
Maybe you make 120 or 200 bucks. Yeah. Maybe you go home dead broke.
Right.
But like that kind of put the little needle in for, you know, an exciting life doing the service. And so, you know, from there, I worked at a pretty well-known place on Avenue A for a long time. I bartended and managed at 7A, 24-hour joint. I feel like anytime I've ever told any industry person about it, they're like, oh, man.
Yeah.
Either that burger or like, yeah. I've been there blacked out, you know, so many times. So it was like a wild time. I worked midnight to 8 a.m. there when I first started there in 1999.
Wow.
And,
weirdly, I did a similar thing when I was young. I was in high school still.
Okay.
And I worked at a Waffle House.
Yes.
Which are open 24 hours a day.
Yeah,
so
smothered and covered, man.
Yeah, buddy. So I worked the overnight shift, which meant it was a 10-hour shift. I caught the end of dinner.
Yeah.
The entirety of the after bar rush and half of breakfast before I had to leave and go to high school.
Yeah. I mean, I always said that it's like, it's the circle of human experience that a lot of people don't always get to see.
Right.
That they don't get to see the whole picture.
Sure.
You know,
it's like sunset, sunrise.
I saw this guy come in with his wife at 9 o'clock. I saw him come in with his girlfriend at 3:30, you know,
right. And you gotta be discreet. Even back then, I think I realized there was, you know, discretion was the bigger part of it, right?
100%. Yeah. And it's hard because like I lived in Long Island for a long time as a kid, and I moved into the city in 99. I was living on 7th Street and C. And you're kind of wide-eyed, but at the same time, you're like, the best move is to like observe and not speak. And it served me well for sure. You know, kept me out of a lot of trouble. So I won't spill too many secrets. I think the statute of limitations is still open on a lot of things that happen there.
I mean, yeah, it's definitely a thing that you have to cultivate it.
Yeah.
You have to understand that, okay, I'm seeing someone, male or female, this isn't one-sided.
Yeah.
You see someone and you can't say things like, welcome back.
Yeah.
Because whoever they're with doesn't know they've been here before.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You just have to say things like, welcome.
It's funny. Something
it's
like
nice to see you.
That came up in the store yesterday. You know, a friend who just visited the store for the first time came in with a friend of hers who's been in a few times. I know them both pretty well for over the years. And she was like, "Oh, I bet you see so and so all the time." And I'm like, "I can't say.
Yeah,
I would never say.
Yeah,
you know, that's in between us. You know, she might come in 6 days a week. This may be only her third time in here, but I'll never say.
Yeah.
You know, same thing. Being a bartender, same thing. You know, just like nice to see you again. That's it.
Yeah, I sort of imply the again.
Yeah.
I just say nice to see you.
Yeah.
Welcome.
If it's a real regular,
back,
if it's a real regular guest, they're kind of wanting a little bit of a like.
Well, you know, but you that read
shine?
That person too. You
exactly
know?
Right.
But there
yeah.
are those who just want to be somewhat anonymous, even to you.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that probably extends. We'll get to the retail world, but I think that probably extends to your world as well, because in my world they may be coming in for an after work drink, but in your world they're coming in to grab a bottle. If they grab a bottle today, but they just grabbed a bottle yesterday, that might be embarrassing.
I always presume that everybody's hosting a party.
Always.
With other people attending.
Always.
Yeah. It'd be rude not to. It'd be rude to say anything about quantity or quality.
Exactly. So you were living in the East Village.
Yeah, living in the East Village, working at that place. I did like every job there, you know. I bartended, I waited tables, but I started out waiting tables, doing that overnight shift. Got connected there with a friend of mine, and you know, just that was really the first place where I really kind of got it, because I got to see the full picture. You know, the place out in Long Island when I was a kid and working at McDonald's, you don't really see everything. But when you go and when you stay in the same place and you write the schedule for the job that you used to have 5 years ago.
Right.
And you are, you know, writing out the steps of service for the jobs that you had 5 years ago, and you're innovating and changing those roles in that position because you've grown through that position, you know, you really kind of get more of a respect for like the holistic view of the restaurant. This is how other people see us. This is how the waiter sees the bartender. This is how the bartender sees the waiter. Like, there's a reason why we tip out the bartender this much and why we do this, that, and the other thing, you know, and you can really see the structure of power and the structure of, you know, order really in the restaurant and why it exists. And so that was pretty enlightening, I think.
And how old were you at that time?
That time I'm like 21 when I started working there. So yeah, until 2008. So I worked there until I was 30.
Amazing.
It was a good time. It was a cool time for New York too. You know, I mean,
sure.
Obviously pre-9/11.
And that neighborhood especially.
Pre-9/11. But yeah, I mean, there's crazy amounts of, you know, late night things that happened there that were, you know, it was like relatively star-studded just because like nothing was open really at 6 in the morning. Where are you going to go if you were in the meatpacking district and just closed up your bar or your club?
Yeah.
Or if you're like, you know, if you're around the corner, if you just shut down, you know, if you just shut down on First Avenue or something, you leave and, you know, where are you going to go? You got a bunch of cash in your pocket. You know, you probably live in the neighborhood.
You're tired. You're kind of hungry.
You're like, oh yeah, California omelet sounds real good right about now. It's almost healthy.
Yeah.
So I worked there for a long time and then ended up connecting with some friends who worked at Number 7 in Fort Greene. So kind of like Michelin recognized restaurant. And that really kind of got me into that level of service, which is basically where I stayed since then, just kind of like hovering below the Michelin star in terms of like where you are in the
literal food chain, right?
Exactly. In the real food chain or food pyramid, I guess, like Bib Gourmand and below. And so kind of got an appreciation for that. Same thing too. I was able to like read the restaurant a little bit more since I had that experience in this like rough and tumble place. It's kind of like, oh, it's the same thing, but nicer. And everybody's nice.
Yeah.
And everybody's clothes are clean.
And everybody's kind of free flowing with the money.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Nobody's card's really getting declined. You know,
right.
Like they're all, it's like 99% going through every single time. As opposed to like, I'm going to have to like hold this guy's ID until he comes back with $5 for his, you know, breakfast special.
Right.
And so that was where I was there for a long time. I helped them with a couple new projects they did. They opened up a couple sandwich shops as like a spin-off project. They had one in the Ace Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Up in Nomad. Before that was a, you know, much like Greenpoint, like before that was a neighborhood where anything happened. And then came back. I moved to Seattle for a couple of years, worked there for a few years. My wife is from out there. And then came back.
When you go back, you got to go to No Anchor.
Oh, you know, I've never been there actually. Yeah.
Oh man, No Anchor just got its second James Beard nomination, which I just listed earlier.
Yeah.
And then, of course, their bar literally right next door, Navy Strength, won last year's Tales of the Cocktail Best New American Cocktail Bar.
That's amazing.
So you got to hit them up.
I mean, Seattle's bar scene is
crushing it.
It's impeccable, you know. Zigzag and Cannon, all those places. Those guys are fantastic. Barnacle's great. Like, just going back to visit, it's you can't really hit every new place because you want to hit all the old places too, because they're still good. Everybody's still doing a fantastic job.
Agreed.
So I worked in Seattle for a couple years there. I actually worked down in the market near Zigzag, so I got to go there after shift a few times. And
when Murray was still on the bar,
yeah,
awesome.
Yeah, so that's like a little bit of like a feather in the cap for being out for a night and getting the last word from that guy is pretty cool.
Yep.
Then came back to New York to open a new concept for these guys, and then ended up working in the West Village, which is kind of where I was for the past 6 years at a Tuscan restaurant on Christopher Street. And, you know, just had this feeling, you know, I got really into Italian wine and spirits there, and seeing, you know, this restaurant is pretty well regarded. Italian wine and spirits like really tells a story from the start of the meal to the end of the meal. And just, I kind of fell in love with that. You know, there's a narrative. You have your aperitif, you have something sparkling, you have white wine. You know, depending on the meal you're having, you have a red wine, maybe you have a bigger red wine, maybe you finish with ricotta, maybe you finish with amaro, maybe you finish with grappa. And like, I always kind of knew about these things, you know, like you saw, you know, like being at a bar when I was 18, 19, you maybe saw like Ramazzotti, maybe you saw Averna, you know, on the back bar, and you were kind of like, I don't know what that is. It's unique. It's interesting. I've seen it at a few different places, but I don't know what it is. And then so getting to understand this and working with the chef, who's, you know, a woman from Florence, who is deeply, this culture is deeply ingrained there, and getting that translated to me, I was like, oh, I love telling this story myself. And so, you know, and at that point, we've had our second kid. So we're two kids in. I was like, okay, this is great. I still love telling this story. I don't like working these hours anymore.
Uh-huh.
So what do I do? You know, and this is a respectable restaurant bar. I'm out the door at 12:30. It's still too late with two kids to be getting home at 1 a.m, you know?
Well, right. Because they've no respect for your need to sleep in.
Yeah. Or really even their own need to sleep in.
Sure.
They're just like, when it's go time, it's go time. It's like, I'm going to pop up. It's 5:15. It's 8:30. Doesn't matter. Yeah. It's time to go. Wake up, mom and dad, I get up. And so we love those guys, of course. And, I kind of thought like, oh, I still want to do this thing. I have this wealth of knowledge. You know, 25 years of working in the business, and you think like, okay, if I do something else, A, I'm going to have to like really level up some skill that I don't know what it is to do another career.
Sure.
And then you're also in this comfortable trap of, well, I make X amount of dollars a night working at this restaurant or bar. How do I leave that to go do a $32,000 a year job at the first level of whatever field I change to, you know?
Right. You sort of face an internal conflict of, okay, I'm going to maybe make this change for my children, but yeah, I'm going to change a lot of income, which is going to affect them too.
I think you can do it in a lot of other places around the country. However, in New York City, not really that easy to take a leap and to take, you know, to take a pass on a paycheck for a year, for 18 months, right, you know? So that was a big challenge. And I thought, okay, how am I going to do this? How am I going to use my knowledge? You know, I, after working in restaurants and doing that top-down role of kind of doing everything in a place, I thought, I don't want to open a restaurant. I don't want to deal with food.
No.
You know, we invested in a bar around the corner from us in Greenpoint, and they're just a bar, you know, and they talked about doing food. And I was like, great. If you guys want to do food, here's my recommendation. Get somebody to do it.
Yeah.
Get somebody else to do it.
Yeah. Here's my recommendation for food. Don't do food.
If you want somebody to do food, you get them to permit it. You get them to staff it. You get them to concept it. And you get them to just pay you a facility fee.
Sure.
Literally, do not do it unless it's meeting those conditions, because it's so many headaches, you know, and it's the margins are tough, and you're already, you know, if you're already a bar with booze, you got half the battle there. You know, having food is just about keeping people in your bar.
Right. So you came to this place where you decided the knowledge base that you built is strong. The passion that you have for the material is there, but suddenly the lifestyle that you're living with your wife and two kids now says to you, this that can't continue.
Yeah, exactly.
So right. There had to be a logical next step, and we're going to come right back
and
find out what that step was, but we already know. We'll be right back with Brendan Casey of Parlor Wine and Spirits right here in Greenpoint, Brooklyn.
Speakeasy on Heritage Radio, and we're bonding. And I'm the Bottle and Bond guy. All right, so we make Bottle and Bond whiskey at Heaven Hill Distillery, makers of Evan Williams Bottle and Bond, Rittenhouse Rye, the most sought-after Bottle and Bond rye whiskey in the world, Henry McKenna, the oldest age-stated Bottle and Bond in the world, and Mellow Corn. Bottle and Bond's great. There's probably 4,000-plus labels of American whiskey today, but there's less than 30 Bottle and Bonds. Tune into the Speakeasy and bond over a little Bottle and Bond, Evan Williams, and Heaven Hill Whiskies. You can't
rewind, erase, forget nothing. And we're back on the Speakeasy with Brendan Casey of Parlor Wine and Spirits right here in Greenpoint. Oh, what you got there, buddy? So now you have my attention.
That sweet little pop. So this is the thing that links the two parts of this story together. So a good friend of mine, actually, he started a project a few years back, and we ended up out at a soccer game out in Long Island, just kind of chatting about it. And he knew, you know, that I'd spent a lot of time in the industry, and he's not an industry person, but he's a big consumer. He loves whiskey. And so he was starting on this project, making his own whiskey. And so I started we're talking back and forth about it. And I think, after a little while, he was kind of like, okay, this guy knows enough stuff where I'm going to want to have this knowledge on board in a more firm sort of way, you know? And so he had me help him launch his brand and get it out into the greater New York area. So this is his stuff. They make it down actually in Bardstown, Kentucky. They contract distill it with a place called Strong Spirits. And this was what brought me to where I am now. So it's Little Wolf whiskey. It's like a rye and malted barley whiskey. And I helped him show it around town. I showed it to a lot of my bartender friends. I showed it to a lot of people I knew in the business. And I kind of thought, oh, I kind of like this. You know, I'm still telling a story. And, you know, that's kind of what bartending is. You know, if you're sitting there, you're telling a story about the way the cocktail was made or about the restaurant and how the restaurant came to be or whatever. Only in this case, I'm doing it at 2 p.m. and showing it to somebody, and then I'm going home, and you know, hey, look at me, I'm home at 7:00, you know,
right?
Super, it's a good time to be home. And so I did that for him for a little while, just kind of ad hoc, helping him out. And so we work, me and my buddy Alex worked on this for a long time. He still does it. That's like his main thing to do, in addition to owning a number of other businesses. And we thought, hey, wouldn't it be cool if you had a place where you did this during the day? And I was like, okay, this is great. And really, also my wife has a big big credit for this too, because she always thought you should open a store. And she had that vision for me. I didn't have it for myself, you know, to be frank. And she was like, oh, you should open a store. I think that would be cool. You'd be like the guy at the store. People like to come in. You know, I like to meet up with people and have a chat and like get them to where they're going. You know, they want to buy a bottle of wine. We have wine. Let's ask a few questions and chop it up. And then get that bottle, you'll be on your way.
I mean, it's the same thing you did a la minute and by the glass.
It's truly identical, with one huge caveat and off-premise.
You don't get to be there while they enjoy it.
The real caveat is you can't pour them a taste.
Yeah.
And I find that that's especially challenging when you're on kind of like the outer fringes of it in terms of flavors and profiles, that sort of thing.
Sure.
You know, so like if you're going to pour like a, you know, like Longue Frezia or like some funky natural wine, and it's like, I don't know if this is going to be a hit or a bust. It's like, let me know how you feel next time you come back to the store, if you do.
Right.
So it's a little bit more of a long gamble, but that's really what brought us to it. You know, I brought this around the city, got it placed in about 60 different bars and restaurants, and from there, you know, my wife actually, she found the listing for this business that we ended up taking over. And these guys are we're the third owners of this store, which I think is also really cool. Just being a neighborhood spot and being there for the community, you know. It's been a liquor store since the 80s, which is awesome.
Red.
And so we've gotten to change it over and do a few different things.
Well, even that, I feel like I remember you you mentioned to me when I was in your store that taking over a liquor store is easier than creating a liquor store.
Also true. Also very true. And we ended up talking to a friend, and he owns a store in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. And his advice, really, he was like, oh, you guys want to do this? Okay, you know, here's how to do it. And he did the same thing, actually. He took over a bulletproof spot. So they, you know, his place, they pulled down, you know, these huge plexiglass sheets
right
around the counter and stuff. So
bulletproof liquor stores are a big thing in New York City.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I don't know if it's analogous to anything anywhere else, really, but
right,
it's pretty unique here. You just have a guy, some places even, it's like a Lazy Susan door where you physically can't interact with any booze.
Yeah.
Or anything. You put your money on the Lazy Susan, it turns around, it goes to a blind side. And then the whiskey comes out or the booze comes out, and that's it.
Yeah. It's like a giant vending machine operated by a human.
Exactly.
You can see it all through plexiglass, and he's back there, and you just go, that one and that one and that one, and then the little Lazy Susan thing.
Truly a wild experience. There's actually one that's down on Mott, like the corner of Mott and Pell Street in Chinatown, if you're ever in town and you want to have this particular weird vibe.
They're also always just crazy brightly lit.
Yeah, it's...
You're standing in like a glass box of lumens and booze all around that you can't touch.
I would imagine it's not an environment that's enjoyable if you've already had a drink. That's for sure. It's got to be painful.
Yeah. Well, it's painful with that one too.
Yeah. So we ended up picking this place up, and just the way the laws work, it's a real pain to get into a space and open a new liquor store. You have to have the lease. You have to have been occupying the space for 6 months before you can even apply.
Which seems wacko. So basically the notion is I've got to acquire a space and hold it for 6 months paying rent and then apply and hope I get approved.
And hope you get approved, and that process
and
can take...
And if I don't get approved...
That process took us from... We submitted in September and we got our official full license in January.
5 months later.
So it could be a year in a space without having any sort of income coming in.
Right, without having rent going out. And also sweating, thinking to yourself, well, I signed a 5-10 year lease.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I'm even going to get approved.
I think there's some like...
What do you got to do? You open a coffee shop.
I think there's some caveats. There's like a good guy clause, which is basically like you can get out.
Sure.
You can kind of write your way around it. But the reality of it is you're throwing that money down the toilet if you end up in that scenario. It's
right.
Real tough. But luckily... There's a way in, and the sideways way in is to buy an existing store. You can either buy their license and buy into their corporation, or you can apply for a temporary and go that way. So we ended up going that way, and you know, that's really it. Now it's being in the store and then seeing every little thing that's different than being behind a bar, and it is really fascinating every single day to see something different.
How does it feel when you're like... Well, actually, I have a funnier question, because I got to see some of the back of the operation while I was there, when I visited you at the shop, and I saw you have some of the stock from the place that it was before. So the place that it was before, which is nothing wrong with what it was, it was a place that was servicing a need, right?
Yeah,
it was a place that served a bunch of mini bottles and flasks, and you know, it was the place that kept the neighborhood, you know, greased,
lubricated. Sure. Yeah, for sure. It's so definitely a genre piece.
So what my question is, what happened to all that stock? Because you took over the stock, right?
Yeah, we took over the stock.
So you're trying to create a whole new... It's like basically saying like, oh, I'm going to open a, you know, a, like you said, sort of a Bib Gourmand level restaurant.
Yeah.
But I took over this McDonald's and there's all this stuff still here. What do you do with it?
You stand with 1 foot on the boat and 1 foot on the pier. And you try to straddle the two until you jump in the boat, hopefully without getting too wet.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what we did. You know, we opened the door the day we got our temporary license without a single thing I had ever bought with our stamp on it, with our like imprimatur of like,
right,
this is us. We're going to, you know, rally behind this flag. And so there's a lot of, you know, like bartending, there's the narrative. You're explaining the story. Hey, we just bought the store. You know, we're neighborhood folks. None of this is ours, but like, it's here.
Yeah.
Kind of damning with faint praise, you know?
Right. I mean, yeah, sure. I would have bagged up some stuff and been like, you know,
not
blind bags.
Not everything lived. That's for sure. We did.
Like,
you
here's
know,
some blind bags for $5. Here's some $10 ones, and here's some $20 ones.
We opened a.
Here's a punch kit.
We opened a few. We opened a few bottles for sure, just to see if like we could even let it go in good conscience,
sure,
with a price on it, and. And some things we couldn't, you know, so some things got boxed up, you know, just oxidized old stock or whatever.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And so some, and some things.
Wine wise, but there was a lot of spirit stuff around.
Yeah. And you know, good thing about spirits.
Never goes bad.
They don't go bad. And that's the other appeal.
It may be bad to start with though.
Yeah. that is true. But that's kind of the appeal of running a place like this versus running a restaurant. You know, you're a dry goods store. You don't have to worry about like, what if the dishwasher goes out? What if the drains back up?
Right.
You know, all the moving parts, all the wet things, all the hot things, all that stuff that's in a restaurant and a bar just doesn't exist here. It's the shelves. It's the basement downstairs.
Yeah.
That's it.
Some music playing.
Beautiful. It's beautifully simple. And, you know, some of that ties into the Italian thing, too. Like, you know, working in a fine dining place that is Tuscan in nature, it's all about, like, have the best ingredients, but not too many.
Oh, yeah. You know? I love that.
Yeah.
That's my style as well.
Yeah, cacio e pepe, you got cheese, you got pasta, you got black pepper.
Yeah.
That's it. Moving but on. It's the best.
Yeah.
It's all the best.
Speaking of the best, let's talk about this this whiskey you brought.
Yeah, so brought a little something in for the bar. Like we said, this is the project that I helped my friend with. And like it's 95% rye, it's 5% malted barley. It's 90 proof, so you can cocktail with it. You can throw an ice cube in it. You can just drink it neat if you want because it's sweet enough. And I mean, you can taste it. You know what's going on there.
Wow. It's got all right, full disclosure, I've been ill. I've been in my bed for the past 3 days, basically. It's kind of a very honeyed finish. Do you get that?
I get a little honey.
Like
get
honeycomb.
A little, like sweet blueberries, maybe.
Yeah.
Like real ripe blueberries. A little cereal taste to it almost.
For sure, cereal.
Has a malted barley, yeah. I think. Kind of rounds it out. Yeah, and so, like I said, my friend and his partner, they started this. They kind of did. They built the spirit itself. They did all the branding for it. I had like a little bit to say. The first run of it had a gold screw cap on it. I said, everything's great. Lose the screw cap. Cork enclosure. Way to go, you know. And they changed the bottle shape a little bit, so it looks a little bit less like it should sit in the rail. And it's in a happy place. You know, they priced it nicely so it can sit on a bar and you don't feel bad about it. Like, this on your bar cart looks good.
Yeah, it's a fine-looking whiskey. I'll post a photo on the Speakeasy Podcast Instagram. Take a look at that. And I'll probably find a link to it as well. So you've been in the shop now how long?
Been in the shop since Halloween of last year. So it's been almost 4 months.
Yeah. Up and fully running.
Up and fully running with almost everything that really has our name on it on the shelves. Took about 2 weeks for us to do a solid clear out. It's been an absolute insane whirlwind of tasting with what it can only describe as, they're going to hate this if they listen to it, but a school of piranhas of wine reps and liquor reps
right.
coming in the door. You know, there's blood in the water.
An
there's a new
calf
store
in the water,
here.
Yeah.
Oh my God. The first few weeks were wild. But we actually, like I said, our friend that has a shop in Williamsburg directed us to his favorite people from certain companies. So we opened our accounts with them as our reps. And so we got a little leg up.
Fast track.
Yeah. I got a little fast track from him. And then, you know, I know a lot of the guys from the finer wine merchants working at a nice wine bar in Manhattan. So we didn't really have to have too much truck with the real hard, you know, the, I don't want to say anything bad about a used car salesman, but a real huckster of a rep. You know, there's some some guys out there pushing some stuff pretty hard that's not very good.
And, you know, just some stuff that needs pushing.
It needs a home somewhere, and it might not be with us.
Exactly.
Yeah. And there's.
I think there's a seat in the pantheon for everything.
I have to agree. Yeah, I don't want.
You don't have to hold that seat, though.
Yeah. I don't. I'm not paying rent for that seat for that particular bottle.
Exactly.
But I think that there's a drink for everyone. You know, and yes, even for somebody who doesn't drink, like some seed lip or something like that.
Sure.
Get some spirit-free cocktails.
Why not? There's more of those things hitting the market too. It's becoming more of a movement. You're focusing mostly on wine.
For sure, for a couple of reasons, but yeah.
What are they?
Well, I think wine has a real story, but it also moves in a way that alcohol doesn't, that spirits don't. You know, you have a 750 milliliter bottle of whiskey. How long is that going to stay in your house? Depending on who you are as a person, maybe 10 days, maybe a month, maybe 6 months. You have a bottle of wine, you open it up. It's not staying in your house more than a week. It's gone. Then you buy another bottle. So just in terms of like having things move, having things turn over, that's helpful for the store, of course, to be moving through inventory. But then also on top of that, I like the stories. You know, the stories are great. I feel like you can do so much to a wine, so much to grapes from start to finish, from the field until you have the finished product. Everybody's got a different thing that they're doing. Everybody's got something unique. There's a lot of innovation. I'm sure all your listeners know about the natural wine craze, about biodynamic wine, and you know, also
skin contact.
Yeah, those orange wines.
Yeah.
Everything that's coming from like a border, like you have, and you know, then you have the story of Europe there. You know, like a wine that's coming from Alto Adige is like, this is a wine with like an Austrian name on the label, but it's Italian, but it tastes like a Swiss wine, you know, and you kind of get to go through that whole story, which is super cool.
One thing I was gonna highlight the notion that you've used the word story a bunch of times.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe that's one of the biggest differences between what you formerly did and what you do now, what I currently do and what you do now, which is a lot of what I do is story-based.
Yeah.
But then I also have lots of props and theater.
Sure.
Whereas I feel like maybe at the shop, you just have the story. Because my prop is, oh, here, I'm going to make you one.
Right.
I'm going to pour you some.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk to you about the other ingredients that are going along with the adjunct story that I'm adding to the story.
Yeah, it's technically illegal to be pouring anything in the store for anybody to taste. You know, you're not allowed to have anything there outside of an official sort of tasting. You can't have like a little small nip bottle on the side where you're pouring splashes for people.
Right.
And so, like you said, there's less of a prop there, but there's other props.
But even back where you were in the restaurant, the props were the food. The props were, you know, whatever, the cheese course. You had other things to prop your story up on.
Oh, for sure.
Whereas now you just have a story to tell, and then hopefully they bite, and hopefully they lay down their money.
Yeah.
And like you said, hopefully they have a good time because you don't know. Because you couldn't give them a taste,
and then when they come back,
hopefully they come back,
yeah, yeah,
and you'll know hopefully right away, right?
Yeah, there's a little more nuance, there's a little more to it, but it's a little bit more subtle. You know, I try to. This is really coming from like my years in service, is maintaining the place as somewhere where like I know stuff about the products. You know, I know these stories, but I try to present it in a real humble way. And just say like, I think this is great. I really enjoyed this. You know, there's some bottles of wine there where I say, hey, we opened this for Thanksgiving. It was great, you know, at dinner. And so that's a bit of the prop in the story.
Sure.
You know, it's kind of like
personalization.
Exactly. And then the store too is personalized. You know, we brought a lot of stuff into the store. And you know, I don't know about everybody else's local bottle shop, but you know, we brought a lot of flair. That's like, for lack of a better word, you know, a lot of flair. You know, like I've got some old punk rock photo books like from Glennie Friedman
right
on the shelves. You know, my sister's boyfriend framed me an old Fugazi ticket from a show that I went to, you know, in 2002. Just kind of like fun stuff that's sitting around the shop. I have a football scarves hanging on the wall.
Yeah, I saw those.
Yeah, a little bit of conversation piece, but also to say like, hey, real people work here and shop here, and this is our thing. You know, a lot of stores.
We're interested in many of the same things you're interested in.
Yeah.
You'd probably be interested in some of these spirits and wines we're interested
so
in.
So a little bit of is kind of tipping your hand and just showing your credibility. Like, I don't tell everybody, hey, I worked at this restaurant that's really highly regarded. I don't say it to anybody really. Just you want it to speak for itself, and so it is a bit more challenging, but also I think it's a little bit more rewarding because the space can kind of stand by itself.
Yeah, that's great, and it's afforded you a better family life, you look saner than me. You look more like
today's my day off, which is probably why I look a little bit more sane. Big shout out to Alex, who's sitting in my seat at the store as we speak. But yeah, for sure. You know, things are a little bit more integrated into a calmer life, I guess. You know, I turned 40 last year, and so I kind of viewed this as the present to myself, you know, and I love working in service. I did it for so long, and this is still service.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think it's not.
Exactly.
Retail is still service.
The energy, though, the hook that brings you back to working in service, like when things are flowing from 7 to 9 to 10 and you're hitting all those points and you're dropping into a conversation and just like you're either saying the funniest thing or you overhear the guests trying to figure out the name of this show and you're like, oh, you're talking about Ozark or something like that. Yeah. You know, it just, that is juice. That's real electric have that feeling. And it's hard to walk away from.
Yeah, it spikes that adrenaline need.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
also good thing to walk away from. Sometimes you got to do it, you know, like you got to walk away from the table sometimes or else the game's not fun anymore.
Truth. Yeah. Any, you know, too much of anything is too much, right?
Yeah, that's right.
You can desensitize yourself to anything. I think that happens a lot in our business. I think that's why I always like to stick and move and do a lot of different things, you know?
Yeah, we always say if you're partying every night, it's not a party. You got a problem.
Yeah.
You know, it's not special anymore.
Yeah. Parties are special.
Yeah.
And speaking of special parties, we're going to do something special on Saturday.
I'm really looking forward to this. I think this is going to be one of the first in a lot of fun events that we're going to do at the store.
Have you done any events yet? Am I the first event?
The only thing we've done in the store is just kind of like a regular old tasting where the wine reps come in and open a few bottles. So this is the first event in the store.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
So this Saturday, I'm going to be in your store, Parlor Wine and Spirits in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. I'm going to bring a stack of my books. I'm going to sell and sign those. And we're going to have do official tasting.
We got an official tasting with House Alpens.
House Alpens, which do you know what they're going to bring to taste that day?
I think so. I recommended a couple things that we sell in the store, as you'd imagine, just kind of make the collaboration real in sync. We're going to be tasting an grappa-based Amaro, Card Amaro.
Yep, love it.
We're going to have...
It's on my menu right now, Amore Margo.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. Campfire in a glass, a little Cappelletti Sfumato Amaro.
Oh, yeah. Smoky.
And then something new to me. I had never experienced this before, but Arancio. So this is an oxidated wine from the Côte Catalan, like very southern France, Maspère. It's called Le Démon de Midi. So... Midday Demon.
Midday Demon.
It's a cool looking thing. It's kind of weird. They like take this wine and put it in a glass Jeroboam and leave it in a garden for 3 years.
What?
I'd never heard of it before and it blew my mind. I was like, I got to taste this. I tasted it and I was like, this is just, it's like a sherry kind of.
Yeah.
But like from France. It's so neat.
They're
They're in rows in a garden. It looks like they've planted the weirdest fruit.
I am so excited for Saturday. And we're doing that from...
We're doing that from 2 to 4 p.m. on Saturday, March 2nd, this week.
And the address is?
We're at 128 Nassau Avenue in between Eckford and McGinnis Boulevard in Greenpoint.
Yeah, so super close to the Nassau stop on the G.
Just a short walk.
Hanging out in Greenpoint on Saturday before I go to work Saturday night.
Not too much Midday Demon for you.
I'll still have plenty. Saturdays, it sounds weird to say it out loud, but Saturday's my lightest day of mental work.
Yeah.
On Saturday, I work over at Windmill, my newest place, but I kind of play the role of barback there on Saturday.
You're almost maitre d' that night, right? You're showing up and...
I'm more behind.
You're lifting, but it's not
mental.
I'm
doing dishes and running glasses and shaking hands and saying hello.
I always call that the glue position when working in a restaurant. You're the guy that sticks everything together.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm the bridge between the front and the back on Saturday nights.
Crucial.
So for me, it's like I'm not... I could be a little loose is what I'm saying. I can have a couple of glasses of neat oxidized garden wine.
That position always needs to be lubricated. It's got to be smooth. You got to flow.
Yeah. All right, man. Brandon, it's been great chatting with you about making the leap from on-premise to off-premise sales.
It's awesome. We didn't even talk about Lambrusco, which has blown my mind.
Was that one of your favorites?
No, it's something that I didn't think I would have to think about in the store all winter. And it is the biggest difference between off and on-premise, which is what I wanted to talk about a little bit here, is that people drink whatever the hell they want at home. And it's great. I totally celebrate it. But I didn't think I'd be reordering Lambrusco in January.
Yeah.
And it's flying. You go home, when you go into a restaurant or bar, like it or not, unbeknownst to you, the choices that are laid out before you are really preset choices, right?
Sure.
You're following a seasonal menu.
Yep.
You're following a bar menu that's tailored to that seasonal menu, right?
Of course.
And if it's 22 degrees outside and you're walking home and you had a shitty day at work and you're like, I just want to drink some Lambrusco and pretend I'm in Italy in the summer, you're going to do that.
Yeah.
And you're going to come into the next store that you see and you're going to say, hey, you have any Lambrusco? And I'm going to look at you like, what do you mean?
Yeah, there's fucking 3 feet of snow on the ground.
Yeah, and you're like, I don't care. And that's the biggest difference. Everybody's very comfortable doing whatever the heck they want in the privacy of their own home, which is obviously, you know, that's where free choice leads you, and it's great. But it is definitely something that blew my mind.
Yeah, I guess that's true. In a retail environment, seasonality is out the window.
Yeah, there are some trends where, like, you buy deeper because of the season.
Of course, of course.
Like, you're not going
to... Rosé, come on, bring it on.
Exactly right. But you got to be ready to fill all those needs.
Yeah, similarly, somebody wants to drink a big old peaty heavy smoky scotch whiskey
on the 4th of July.
Day of summer.
Yeah. Yeah. God bless.
I got it right over here.
Yeah, exactly right.
Follow me to the selection.
Yeah.
Well, that's fascinating, too. Well, I'm looking really forward to hanging out with you on Saturday, signing some books, and drinking some cool stuff from the team over at Hazal Pens. I assume David Phillips will join us.
I think we're going to have Thierry, who you have some form of relationship
Thierry,
with.
Yeah,
I won't say any more than that. But
yeah, I know all those dudes. I carry a bunch of their junk. They're delicious, delicious juice. well, man, this has been a fascinating conversation because I've never really done the retail aspect of this business, of this part of the business. Neither have I
until a few months ago. So it's been a real adventure.
I was the GM of a gourmet grocery store for some years, but that was all grocery, not booze. I feel like maybe some of these things are similar, but man, the booze part is really pretty fascinating to me, and hopefully to our listeners as well. Either way, thanks again for bringing us this bottle of Little Wolf whiskey from Bardstown, Kentucky. It is delicious. Notes of honeycomb and berry on the backside. I'm currently working on a menu for an all-American whiskey and beer bar, so I'm going to be checking this out and seeing if I can get it on the bar there. That'll be opening hopefully in early April.
Got to stay busy.
Dude, yeah, I'm never not busy. All right, well, thanks for joining me here on the Speakeasy. Let's take a little sip of this and get out of here. Thanks for being here, buddy.
Thanks for having me so much. Cheers.
Cheers, buddy. See you Saturday.
Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that sound. It's gonna get you some.
More of the Speakeasy? Follow us and ask questions on Instagram at Speakeasy Podcast or on Twitter at Speakeasy Radio. You can find Damon at Damon Bolte, and you can find me at Creative Drunk on all platforms. Take a moment to write us a review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite platform and give us a star rating, 5 if possible. If you're visiting New York City or a resident, stop by the studio and hang out with us during an episode. Reach out beforehand and make sure we'll be here. We'd love to see you. And please support our show by visiting heritageradionetwork.org and clicking on the beating heart to donate.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.